Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program...John Russell has a story on the U.S. Air Force's new stealth bomber. Brian Lynn and Faith Perlow report on the Kennedy Center Honors. And Jill Robbins and Dan Friedel talk about gardening terms. Later, we present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first...
The United States made public its newest stealth bomber last week, after years of secret development. The bomber is part of the country's answer to rising concerns over a future conflict with China. The B-21 Raider is the first new American bomber aircraft in more than 30 years. Almost every part of the program is classified, meaning kept secret.From the public. At last week's Friday evening event at the Air Force's Plant 42 in Palmdale, California, the public got its first view of the Raider. The tightly controlled ceremony started with a flyover of the three bombers still in service, the B-52 Stratofortress, the B-1 Lancer, and the B-2 Spirit. Then...Large doors slowly opened, and the B-21 was partially taken out of a building. "This isn't just another airplane," Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said. "It's the embodiment of America's determination to defend the Republic that we all love." Embodiment means that something is a perfect example of a quality or idea.The bomber is part of the U.S. efforts to modernize its nuclear abilities, which also include silo-launched nuclear ballistic missiles and submarine-launched missiles. The efforts come at a time of fast Chinese military modernization. China could have 1,500 nuclear weapons by 2035.And the U.S. Defense Department said recently in its yearly China report that China's gains in cyber warfare, space capabilities, and other areas present the most serious challenge to U.S. national security and the free and open international system. Kathy Warden is the chief executive of Northrop Grumman, which is building the Raider. She said the Raider looks like the B-2,But once you get inside, the similarities stop. The way it operates is very complex compared to the B-2 because the technology has evolved so much in terms of the computing capability, Warden said. Other changes include the use of advanced materials to make the bomber harder to detect. 6 B-21 Raiders are in production. The Air Force plans to build 100...that can carry either nuclear weapons or normal bombs. The plane can also be deployed with or without a human crew. Both the U.S. Air Force and Northrop also point to the Raider's relatively quick development. The bomber went from contract award to public appearance in 7 years. Other new fighter and ship programs have taken over 10 or 20 years.The cost of the bombers is unknown. The Air Force previously put the price for a buy of 100 aircraft at an average cost of $550 million each in 2010 dollars. That amount represents around $753 million today. Still, it is unclear how many bombers will be built. "We will soon fly this aircraft, test it,and then move it into production, and we will build the bomber force in numbers suited to the strategic environment ahead," Austin said. I'm John Russell.
A group of performing artists were honored Sunday night for their influence on American arts and culture. The honorees included actor George Clooney, singer Amy Grant, composer Tanya Leon, singer Gladys Knight, and Irish rock group U2. A ceremony celebrating the artists was held at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington, D.C. The event just entered its 45th year. U.S. President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris attended the gathering, along with cabinet members and leaders from Congress. Before the event, Biden personally praised the honorees at a reception at the White House. He recognized the performers for their individual abilities and said the group represented the spirit of the whole country.
The show celebrated all the honorees' work, but none of them personally performed. Instead, other artists performed their works for the crowd. Actor and filmmaker Clooney told reporters he felt especially honored because he used to watch the Kennedy Center Honors Show on television while growing up in a small Kentucky town. He remembered seeing people like Jimmy Stewart and Robert Redford receive the award. "That's an exciting fraternity to be a part of," Clooney said. Actors Julia Roberts and Matt Damon join Clooney's father, Nick, and others on the Kennedy Center's stage to honor him. George's best and most important work is still ahead of him, Clooney's father said.
Six-time Grammy Award winner Grant told reporters before the event she felt honored to be chosen, but the singer added that she also felt a debt of gratitude for all the people who have worked together with her over the past 40 years. "Everything takes a village," Grant said. Singers Sheryl Crow, Brandi Carlile, CeCe Winans, and BB Winans were among the artists who celebrated Grant with a selection of her songs.
Knight, who has won 7 Grammy Awards, is famous for hits including "I Heard It Through the Grapevine" and "Midnight Train to Georgia." She started out as the lead singer of The Pips, which became Gladys Knight and The Pips, in 1962. Rapper and actor LL Cool J said Knight connects with you on a deeper spiritual level. Singers, including Garth Brooks and Patti LaBelle, performed some of Knight's songs. Cuban-born Leon is a conductor as well as a composer. Her orchestral piece, Stride, won the 2021 Pulitzer Prize in Music. Composer and opera singer Alicia Hall Moran said Leon's pieces represent moments in time inspired by art and history and nature. She and her husband, Jason Moran, along with cellist Sterling Elliott, performed Leon's work, O Yemanja.
The final tribute of the evening went to the Irish band U2. The group, with members Bono, The Edge, Adam Clayton, and Larry Mullen Jr., has won 22 Grammy Awards. U2 was selected in 2005 for inclusion in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Kennedy Center Honors Show will be broadcast on the American television network CBS on December 28th. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Faith Perlow.
Coming up next, Jill Robbins and Dan Friedel talk about gardening terms even English speakers might not know.
Hey, Dan. I heard you had some snow recently in Ohio. Did you get your tomatoes picked before they froze?
That's right, Jill. It is getting cold here. And yes, I did pick my tomatoes just in time. I have hundreds of tomatoes now.
Did you pick some green ones to store for the winter?
Yes, I did. I have a box filled with them. I hope they will turn red sometime soon.
Then you can have fresh tomatoes on your salads during the holidays.
I hope so.
Since the cold weather has come, we can take a break from gardening and think about the garden words we've learned this year. Associated Press writer Jessica Damiano spent 2022 writing about gardening. She wrote about how to prepare your plants and soil for the winter. She also gave advice on gardening in shady areas, places without much direct sunlight. She gave guidance on issues as different as insect control and saving and storing seeds. Damiano also wrote about the language of gardening, providing meanings to some unusual words used in the field. Dan, can you tell us about one of the unusual words you learned from reading her gardening stories this year?
Yes, Jill. I never knew the word scarification.
Oh, you mean something to do with Halloween? Or scary plants?
Well, Jill, I can see why you might think that, but gardeners and ghosts do not go together in this case. The word is not so worrisome. Gardeners scarify seeds by making little cuts or roughening their hard outer covers.
Oh, I bet that helps the seed germinate faster.
That's exactly right, Jill. Do not confuse germination with the word germ. We are not spreading any diseases. Germination is the first part in the process of a seed growing into a plant.
Dan, did you learn any words that might be helpful for our learners in dry places?
Yes, I did. I learned a term that sounds mysterious, even to native English speakers. Xeriscaping. It simply describes a way to garden with plants that do not need much water.
I think I could remember that because it sounds like the word zero, which means nothing. So the plants do not need much help to grow.
Jill, there are other words in Damiano's list that people learning English might misunderstand. One of them is broadcast.
A broadcast is usually a program that is sent out on television or radio, like what we do here at Voice of America. However, in the gardening world, broadcast means to spread seeds over a large area, instead of planting in single, straight lines.
Damiano also includes the word amendment in her list. In a recent gardening story, our colleagues Ashley Thompson and Gregory Stockel talked about that word. Many people may know an amendment is an addition to a document, such as the United States Constitution. The Constitution has many amendments.
But in gardening, the word amendment has to do with material added to soil as a way to make it more fertile. Compost or animal waste is a soil amendment.
Thanks, Jill. This has been a fun conversation. I learned so much this year about gardening, thanks to both you and Jessica from the Associated Press. I think next year, my tomatoes will be even better.
You're welcome, Dan. I'll come visit you and have a salad sometime.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the summer of 1858, two candidates campaigned across the state of Illinois for a seat in the United States Senate. That seat belonged to Stephen Douglas from the Democratic Party. He was seeking re-election. His opponent was a lawyer from the newly established Republican Party. His name was Abraham Lincoln. This week in our series, Frank Oliver and Larry West tell us about this campaign of statewide but also national importance.
Abraham Lincoln proposed that he and Stephen Douglas hold several debates. The rules for each debate would be the same. One man would speak for an hour. His opponent would speak for an hour and a half. Then the first man would speak for half an hour to close the debate. Douglas agreed. There were seven debates in all. They were held in towns throughout Illinois. In some places, there was great interest in what the two candidates had to say. Thousands of people attended. Douglas was a short, heavy man. One reporter said he looked like a fierce bulldog. Douglas' friends and supporters called him the Little Giant. Lincoln was just the opposite. He was very tall and thin, with long arms and legs. His clothes did not fit well, and he had a plain face, one which many thought was ugly. He looked more like a simple farmer than a candidate for the United States Senate.
The Lincoln-Douglas debates covered party politics and the future of the nation. But everything the two men discussed was tied to one issue, slavery. Douglas spoke first at the first debate. He questioned a statement made in one of Lincoln's campaign speeches. Lincoln had said that the United States could not continue to permit slavery in some areas while banning it in others. He said the Union could not stand so divided. It must either permit slavery everywhere or nowhere. Douglas did not agree. He noted that the country had been half slave and half free for 70 years. Why then, he asked, should it not continue to exist that way? The United States was a big country. What was best for one part might not be best for another.
Then Douglas questioned Lincoln's statement on the Supreme Court's Dred Scott decision. Lincoln had said he opposed the decision because it did not permit Negroes to enjoy the rights of citizenship. Douglas said he believed the decision was correct. He said it was clear that the government had been made by white men for white men. He said he opposed Negro citizenship. "I do not accept the Negro as my equal," Douglas said, "and I deny that he is my brother. However," he said, "this does not mean I believe that Negroes should be slaves. Negroes should enjoy every possible right that does not threaten the safety of the society in which they live. Every state and territory must decide for itself what these rights will be. Illinois decided that Negroes will not be citizens, but that it will protect their life, property, and civil rights. It keeps from Negroes only political rights and refuses to make Negroes equal to white men." "That policy satisfies me," Douglas said, "and it satisfies the Democratic Party."
Then Lincoln spoke. First, he denied that the Republican Party was an abolitionist party. "I have no purpose," he said, "either directly or indirectly, to interfere with slavery where it exists. I believe I have no legal right to do so, nor do I wish to do so. I do not," Lincoln said, "wish to propose political and social equality between the white and black races." "But," he went on, "there is no reason in the world why Negroes should not have all the natural rights listed in the Declaration of Independence, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." "I agree with Judge Douglas," Lincoln said, "that the Negro is not my equal in many ways, certainly not in color, perhaps not mentally or morally. But in the right to eat the bread that his own hand earns, he is my equal and the equal of Judge Douglas and the equal of every living man."
Lincoln then defended his statement that the United States could not continue half slave and half free. He said he did not mean that customs or institutions must be the same in every state. He said it was healthy and necessary for differences to exist in a country so large. He said different customs and institutions helped unite the country, not divide it. But Lincoln questioned if slavery was such an institution. He said slavery had not tied the states of the Union together, but had always been an issue that divided them. How had the country existed half slave and half free for so many years? Lincoln asked. Because, he said, the men who created the government believed that slavery was only temporary. Once people understood that slavery was not permanent, the crisis would pass. Slavery could be left alone in the South until it slowly died. That way, Lincoln said, would be best for both the white and black races.
Stephen Douglas and Abraham Lincoln were campaigning for a Senate seat from the state of Illinois. But their debates had national importance, too. Douglas expected to be the Democratic candidate for president in 1860. His statements could win or lose him support for that contest. Whenever possible, he tried to show that he was a man of the people, like Lincoln. He tried to show that his Democratic Party was a national party, while the Republican Party was a party only of the North. And he tried to show that Lincoln's policies would lead to civil war.
Lincoln, for his part, may have looked like a simple farmer, but he was a very smart lawyer and politician. He asked questions which he knew would cause trouble for Douglas. He wanted to create a split between Douglas and his supporters in the South. Lincoln also wanted to keep alive the debate over slavery. That, he said, is the real issue. That is the issue that will continue in this country when these poor tongues of Judge Douglas and myself are silent. It is the eternal struggle between right and wrong.
In Illinois in 1858, the state legislature chose the men who would represent the state in the National Senate. So Stephen Douglas and Abraham Lincoln had to depend on legislative support to get to Washington. On Election Day, the legislative candidates supporting Lincoln won 4,000 more popular votes than the candidates supporting Douglas. But because of the way election areas had been organized, the Douglas Democrats won a majority of seats. The newly elected legislature chose him to be senator.
Lincoln was sad that he had not won, but he said he was glad to have tried. The campaign, he said, gave me a hearing on the great question of the age, which I could have had in no other way. And though I now sink out of view and shall be forgotten, I believe I have made some marks which will tell for the cause of civil liberty long after I have gone. Many people, however, did not think Abraham Lincoln would be forgotten. His campaign speeches had been published everywhere in the East. His name was becoming widely known. People began to speak of him as a presidential candidate. To win the presidential election of 1860, the Republican Party had decided it needed a man of the people. He must be a good politician and leader. He must be opposed to slavery, but not too extreme. Many people thought Lincoln could be that man.
After the election in Illinois, Lincoln made several speaking trips in the western states. In none of his speeches did he say he might be a candidate for president in 1860. If anyone said anything about Lincoln for president, he would answer that he did not have the ability. Or he would say there were better men in the party than himself. Lincoln said, "Only events can make a president." He would wait for those events.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.